Radio Prague News.
Officials in Moravský Krumlov have blocked the planned move of Alfons Mucha's Slav epic to Prague. The new Minister of Transport is to examine all of the ministry's contracts and tenders on suspicion of corruption, and the Czech President is to receive the newly appointed Prime Minister at Prague Castle on Tuesday for... Officials in Moravský Krumlov have blocked the planned move of Alfons Mucha's Slav epic to Prague. Movers were on Monday due to start taking the first of the 20 paintings that make up the masterpiece to the capital for display at the Veletržní palác Modern Art Gallery. However, local authorities in Moravský Krumlov, where the Slav epic has been housed for over half a century, have heeded a call from Mucha's heirs to bar anybody from handling it. The ban will remain in place until uncertainties surrounding a 1913 contract granting the city of Prague ownership of the artwork have been cleared up. Vít Bárta, the new Minister of Transport, has said that he is planning to examine all of his ministry's contracts and tenders, some of which he considers outrageously wasteful. At a press conference on Monday, Mr. Bárta said that the ministry's contract with the company Kapsch was particularly suspicious. The firm won a 22 billion crown tender to build the country's toll system years ago, but is still receiving money from the ministry thanks to certain clauses in the contract. Mr. Bárta has also put on hold any new public tenders, with the exception of two, the purchase of salt and vehicles needed for winter road maintenance. President Václav Klaus is to receive the newly appointed Prime Minister Petr Nečas at Prague Castle for a working lunch on Tuesday. Likely topics on the agenda are the appointment of a new Czech ombudsman to replace Otokar Motyl, who died in May, and the priorities of the new government. The three-party government coalition is currently preparing its policy program to be presented to the lower house on August 10th, when the government plans to ask the house for a vote of confidence. Mr. Nečas was appointed to the office of prime minister 2 weeks ago. A baby seal was born in the northern Bohemian Zoo in Ústí nad Labem, a spokeswoman said on Monday. The baby was delivered on Friday. It is the first seal specimen to be born in a Czech zoo. Its mother, an 11-year-old seal named Mary, came to the zoo from Germany in 2005. There are a total of 167 seal specimens living in 48 zoos across Europe. And now for a brief look at the weather. At the start of this week, we will see both rain and sunshine in the Czech Republic, and during the day, our temperatures are expected to reach up to 20 degrees Celsius during the day. My name is Sarah Borivka, and this brings us to the end of today's news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Christian Falvey, many thanks for tuning in. Coming up on today's show, one of the most celebrated Czech artworks, Alfons Mucha's Slav epic, is staying put after a court blocks its controversial move to Prague. A new ruling from the Constitutional Court will give some mentally handicapped the right to vote. And later in One-on-One, we speak to Jan Bubeník, one of the student leaders of 1989's Velvet Revolution.
I couldn't imagine that life could be so free, so open, so colorful, like we have 20 years after the changes.
I hope you'll stay with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. Alfons Mucha's masterpiece, the Slav epic, will not be moved from its temporary home in Moravský Krumlov to Prague for the time being, not before legal questions over its ownership are cleared up. That was the message a Czech court sent on Monday, heeding a call from the painter's heirs to block anyone from handling the work. The ruling came only hours or so before the first transfer of the canvases was to begin. To Prague, where the city has been hoping to temporarily show them at the Veletržní palác gallery. A little earlier, Jan Wellinger spoke to the painter's grandson, Jan Mucha, on a line to Italy.
The place where it was supposed to be put is not suitable, and that indeed, were the Slav epic to be put there, there would be acute danger of its possible destruction. That is not acceptable. Essentially, the space, when the building was built, was meant to exhibit industrial machinery. It was not built as space which would house fragile works of art. Of course, you can adapt any space, but I think the cost on making that environment particularly safe would be colossal. Also, what is not acceptable is the seeking of temporary solution. What to us is very important as a family is to find the final suitable place for the Slav epic, which should be in Prague. And for that, whether it is a question of talking in a constructive terms to the city of Prague, or if we are forced to, having to resort to the full force of the legal system of the Czech Republic, we will do whatever it takes.
One of the factors on which Alphonse Mucha's donation of the Slav epic is hinged is the fact that it would have its own building permanently housing the work. That hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened, and also what has been completely ignored. He has spent decades in organizing exactly how the paintings should be placed. This also has been completely ignored.
Now, as late as March of this year, speaking to our station, you suggested that negotiations had made progress and that there were two principal sites in Prague that were being discussed.
Correct.
Have those discussions stalled now? Or what is the state of
yes,
those?
I mean, it's astonishing because it was about 2 years ago that the city of Prague finally, I mean, that was a very positive move, started talking to us, and we were engaged in a constructive, forward-looking discussion. But then suddenly, as you say, in March, you may recall there was a request from Japan to lend the entire Slav epic to Japan, which the city has refused, and we agreed with the reasoning. But simultaneously, completely as a lightning from a blue sky, this extraordinary decision came down. Let's move the Slav epic, let's have it in Prague by September. We were stunned. That was never discussed.
That was Jan Wellinger speaking to the grandson of Alphonse Mucha, John Mucha. The Constitutional Court has ruled that Czechs who were stripped of certain legal rights due to conditions such as mental retardation and dementia will not automatically lose their right to vote. Rather, courts will now have to determine on a case-by-case basis whether mentally challenged or ill citizens should be allowed to keep that right. But some experts believe that the verdict still leaves plenty of questions unresolved. Sarah Barufka has the story.
Some 25,000 adults in the Czech Republic are legally incapacitated. Most often, legal incapacitation aims to protect mentally challenged people from making bad financial choices or signing legal contracts which they do not understand. Until recently, however, losing one's legal capacity would also go hand in hand with losing some constitutional rights, such as the right to vote. Now, the Czech Constitutional Court has issued a ruling that will most likely reverse this automatic loss. Judge Miloslav Výborný delivered the verdict.
The fundamental mistake up to now has been that in day-to-day legal practice, judges did not take into account constitutional rights, such as the right to vote when ruling in incapacitation cases.
Some judges and legal experts consider the ruling a breakthrough, since it forces courts to examine on a case-by-case basis the question of whether a legally incapacitated person should or should not be able to vote. However, others believe that the issue still hasn't been resolved completely. Maroš Matyáško is a lawyer with the human rights NGO Liga lidských práv.
This is only a small victory because the problematic paragraphs of the electoral law have not been removed by the Constitutional Court's verdict. There is no fail-proof way for either judges or psychologists to determine whether someone is mentally capable of voting or not. So that is a big challenge for both the Czech judiciary and the psychiatric system.
That was Sarah Barufko with that report. To those of you who may just be tuning in, thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. And now, as always of a Monday, it's time for the news from the world of sport, presented by Ian Willoughby.
We begin today with cycling and the news that the Czech Republic's Roman Kreuziger has finished ninth in the Tour de France for the second time in a row. The liquid gas rider, who is 24, finished 11 minutes and 54 seconds behind winner Alberto Contador in this year's Tour. He had been in seventh overall after the first week, but fell back somewhat in the Alps, only to get back into the first 10, thanks to some strong performances in the Pyrenees. Speaking after the race came to a climax on the Champs-Élysées on Sunday afternoon, Roman Kreuziger said he wasn't too disappointed not to have improved on last year's placing.
I am satisfied because the aim was to finish in the top 10, and I've done that. I knew at the start of the season that there'd be more people here than last year, so I couldn't be more satisfied. That said, there were a few moments my trainer and I will want to go over later. We'll sit down and analyze them to make sure they don't happen again next year.
Moving on to athletics, and the Czech team are now in Barcelona for the European Championships, which begin on Tuesday. One of the country's strongest medal hopefuls should be women's javelin world record holder Barbara Špatáková. However, the Olympic champion sustained an elbow injury at a Diamond League meeting last week and is having to work extremely hard to get fit in time for the heats.
I've been for various kinds of physiotherapy. I'm trying microcurrents, I'm lubricating it, everything possible. I'm not going to throw again before Tuesday. We'll see whether it hurts or not. I think more likely it will, but I have to fight it. It's a pity, really. It's bad luck.
And let's hope Barbara Špatáková wins that race against time to be fit for the European Championships. Other Czech medal hopefuls in Barcelona include Petr Svoboda in the hurdles and Petr Friedrich in the men's javelin. Football now, and one of the biggest talking points of the weekend's action in the Czech First Division was an unsavoury incident in Sparta Prague's 2-1 win over Slovácko. Television pictures seem to show Sparta's Tomáš Řepka spitting at the visitors' Ladislav Volašák. The referee missed the incident, but the hot-headed defender could find himself facing severe sanctions if the matter comes before a disciplinary hearing. That's all the sport for today.
Ian Willoughby there with the news and sport. This is Radio Prague. Today, Jan Bubeník is a headhunter, but in 1989 he was studying medicine when he found himself caught up in the revolution that saw the edifice of communism collapse in Czechoslovakia. A decade after he came to prominence as a student leader, Bubeník was again in the news in 2001, this time when he was thrown in jail in Cuba. He is Ian Willoughby's guest on this week's One-on-One.
Jan Bubeník was one of the organizers of a student march in Prague on November 17, 1989, to mark the anniversary of a Nazi crackdown on Czech universities 50 years previously. When the marchers carried on to Národní Street in the center of the city, they were brutally attacked by police, an incident which set in train the fall of communism in Czechoslovakia. Bubeník quickly became one of the student leaders of the Velvet Revolution, and even served briefly as a member of parliament. Today he runs a successful recruitment agency. At its Prague offices the other day, I asked Jan Bubaník what were his strongest memories of the Velvet Revolution.
First, when I came to Albertov, when the people gathered, it was the first time when it was officially permitted. They call it manifestation rather than demonstration. So it was a good pretext to get together. It was a test how many people would show up, and there were tens of thousands of people who, and for the first time I saw that we are not the crazy one. And if we are together, we could probably do something about it. Second memory from the day was that I just wanted to run for my life when we got really brutally beaten up, and I just kind of felt that the revolution is nothing for me, you know, that with the crack hat, you're not going to do much. And then the euphoria when I was one of the student, basically I was one of the members of parliament who voted Havel in, and that was the ultimate kind of victory where I felt that it's probably not going to go back to communism. So there were deep fears and deep elations, or high elations and euphoria, that I was able to be part of such a dramatic change in our history.
You mentioned the vote for Havel. I believe you were briefly a member of the Czechoslovak parliament.
That's correct. I mean, I was 21. I barely passed the required age requirement for my MP. And I was asked to basically stand in the 5th district of Prague, where my medical school was located. I couldn't sleep for 3 nights before saying yes, and the late ombudsman Otakar Motyl, who was the person I sought an advice, he said, you know, Jan, go ahead, we need people who don't have any baggage from 68 or no other. He said, use your common sense and you'll be a big addition to the kind of new country.
But you didn't stay very long in the parliament.
That's correct. I promised to stay there and do campaign before the first 3 elections for Civic Forum, because I kind of remain in the spotlight as one of the few student leaders. But I realized that whether I would like to be a politician, a medical doctor, or a businessman, that I should first kind of get a trade, learn, actually know something about life before starting regulating everybody else's life. And I think it was I think I had more luck than brains to actually go and travel the world a little bit, learn languages, and actually become a professional.
I believe you went to the United States in the early 1990s. Where did you go? What did you do? And what did you get from the experience?
I went there the first time in the summer of 1990 to study English as a second language at UCLA. And that was a life-changing experience, because all of a sudden, from, I would say, black and white picture, it went for the full color. And all of a sudden, I could exchange ideas, opinions with people around the world. And so it was the prerequisite to actually start learning things and being able to have things firsthand. And then I went to study economics at the University of Colorado in Boulder. In between, I also was partner in a business where we were exporting Czech glass through Bahamas to the U.S. So there was lots of experience, and but mainly it changed kind of certain perspective on life. I met lots of young people who borrowed lots of money to actually get a good education, and they started their professional life with huge debt, but they didn't have to steal, they didn't have to cut corners. They lived a very decent life, and because they knew something, somebody paid them professional income, and they had a very nice life. And I was recruited by American firm McKinsey and Company to join their Prague office, and they also get smart young people. They work them hard, but they pay them very good salaries, and I think that influenced my life tremendously.
In 2001, you were arrested in Cuba with Ivan Pilip, who was at that time a member of the Czech parliament. Could you remind us of that story, please?
We were asked by American human rights organization called Freedom House. It's a bipartisan think tank which is monitoring human rights around the world, to go and meet Cuban dissidents, courageous people who openly stand against Castro and his regime. And when asked by Ivan to accompany him, because he was on the same mission a year before, and Ivan knew from our mutual friends that I have done similar things in Zimbabwe and South Africa prior to the end of apartheid. So I said, okay, I will, because I felt that we were on the receiving end before 89. And we should share the same hope that one day, if these people keep the battle up, that they will also have, maybe that they could go to political retirement like myself and build your firm, raise your kids in free and a happy society.
You spent 3 weeks, I believe, in a cell in Cuba. How much danger did you feel you were in?
You know, we were for 10 days, we didn't know whether anybody knows what's going on with us. And that's a universe of time. We had a sleep deprivation. We were interrogated for several hours every day. And they told us that they will do whatever they want with us. They said, don't you remember how it used to be in your country? And in the moment you just go, eject, please get me out of here. And it was very much a deja vu. You know that one old man who is a totalitarian ruler will wake up and a human's life has no value. So it was very scary, but it was, I would say, long enough to test yourself and your environment, and short enough not to give up hope. At the end, we were lucky that Peter Pithart flew in there and actually negotiated our release.
You now have your own company. It's a kind of high-end recruitment agency. How did you get into this business?
I was headhunted to become a headhunter. I was a candidate in a search for a director of private equity, and then I declined that, and the headhunter said, we really like how you communicate, would you join us? And later I joined a different one, joined an American global firm, become a head of their operations in Prague, and after they put me on unpaid leave of absence while I was in prison in Cuba, I said, thank you very much for the support, and I took it emotionally. And I left and set up my own shop. And I have to say that I'm actually grateful to them that they forced me to build something which is my own platform where I could spend time the way I want and also dedicate some time to NGO activities.
If we could go back for a moment to 89, how do you think the Velvet Revolution impacted your life or the course of your life?
I think it was like I was a hit by a speed train of history. I was being trained to become a pediatrician, and I was thinking about either working with small kids or being a psychiatrist. And I couldn't imagine that life could be so free, so open, so colorful, like we have 20 years after the changes. And so for me, the system we live in is not perfect, but I think it's just a light years away from what we used to have. So I'm extremely happy with the change, and I think I was lucky to be very close to the change and maybe be small wheel in the whole machine which could be there at a historic moment. And so I think my generation remembers how it used to be and very much appreciates the changes, and we were able to take full advantage of the opportunity it presented to us.
That was Jan Bubeník, one of the student leaders of the Velvet Revolution, ending that edition of One on One and Radio Prague's English broadcast for today. Don't forget, this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions or comments, we're always glad to hear them. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, and all of us here at Radio Prague, we thank you for listening and we wish you the best.